The unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it. We can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. Homage to the Buddha. Homage to the Dharma. Homage to the Sangha. So here we all are, commemorating our great master, Ho Wun Ji Yu. My master, some of your master's master, some of you never met her, some of you knew her of old. And I just thought I'd talk about something she would often talk about. Keeping true to the source. I noticed that came up several times in our invocations this morning. Keeping true to the source. This little phrase comes from the Sondo Kai. You know, from west to east unseen, flowed out the mind of India's greatest sage, and to the source kept true, as an unsullied stream is clear. Keeping true to the source, keeping true to the Dharma, Buddha nature. Well, what did she mean by this? What did Reverend Master mean, keeping true to the source? As what is the source? There's ways of looking at it, but I say, in simply, it's Buddha nature. That's the source that we're all part of, that from which everything comes, our true nature, that we do our best to realize in everybody, in everything, in all our thoughts, words, and deeds, and all the things we experience, Buddha nature within, which embraces everything, the source. Well, it sounds very simple, but it's much bigger and deeper than we can possibly fathom. Actually. So I think maybe just to see, how did Reverend Master Jiyu herself practice this keeping true to the source? How did she do that? Well, to start with, she would trust her master, Koho Zenji. She would trust his teaching. He was the one who brought her over to Japan, invited her over, and she went. She took him up on it and went. And as we know, he fought many battles on her behalf to have her there as a female Westerner in a male Japanese temple. And she would often, you know, she'd talk about him now and then. She didn't have that much contact with him. But she would often say there were things that he told her that she never quite understood. Some of them she eventually proved true for herself. Oh, that's what he meant, you know. But some things she never quite fathomed. But she would put them, say, as she would call it, on the back burner. She would just put them aside. She wouldn't disbelieve them. She wouldn't reject them. But she wouldn't just swallow them whole, say, well, he said that, it must be true. She would just put it aside and think, well, let me just let that sit there and just let it stew and simmer for a while. And sometimes they'd resolve and sometimes they didn't. She said that towards the end of her life there were things she'd never understood that he'd taught her. But she didn't worry about it. She would just simply trust his heart, trust his training, trust what he had passed on to her. And she didn't have to worry about that which is more than we can understand. Keeping true to the source, trusting the deeper thing, trusting the heart of Koho Zenji, which she knew was true, keeping true to the source. Another thing, her practice of faith. She had very deep faith. Keeping going, no matter what. That's her, keeping going. Doing the Kechi Miyako ceremony, just walking along. It's a nice picture to have because you can't see her face. She's not looking at us. She's just going. And this one thing I remember of her well, that she would bring us with her. She was concerned for everybody. But she wasn't turning back for us. She was going. And we could come along or not. And if somebody was wandering off, she'd try and, you know, bring him back in. But she was not going to stop. She was not going to swerve aside. She was going. And that's very clear in that picture, I think. Just keeping on the way. Never giving up. Never turning back. Trusting your own true nature. She had very deep spiritual experience, and she wrote about it, as we know. And She would often consult her own disciples. Actually, she did it all the time, always consulting. She didn't just say, well, I know what I'm doing. I've had all this experience. I know where, you know. She wasn't like it at all. She knew she could be wrong. She'd ask her disciples for advice and take it over and over again. Sometimes at the point where I still think, oh, not again, you know. But always she would take refuge in her disciples, ask them for advice over and over again. You know, could I do better with this thing? There were situations that came up that were really difficult. She wouldn't know what to do. And she would do her best to sit still. What's really good to do here? Consult her disciples. But then, still, do what she felt was right. Even if it wasn't exactly what they said, that would be information, but it wasn't always what she would do. She would just, what's best here? You know, keeping true to the source, that heart. She knew she was fallible. She wasn't perfect. She wasn't all-knowing. And she'd tell us over and over again that you never have arrived. You can never say, well, now I know everything. Now I'm perfected. Now I've finished my training. You always keep going. Never, never say you've got there. This is why she translated that line in the Scripture of Great Wisdom, going, going, going on, always going on beyond, always becoming Buddha. Nobody else did that. She did that. And I think it shows a great wisdom and humility that she always said, there's always more to do. There's always further to go. Because it's keeping true to the source. It's a kind of a dynamic thing. It's not a static thing. You don't just arrive, okay, here I am. But you're just constantly guiding yourself, like guiding yourself towards a North Star. There it is. And sometimes you don't see it because there's clouds there. You know, you've got a mess on your hands or you're confused or whatever. But you know it's there somewhere. And you just do your best. Sometimes you can see where you're going. Sometimes you can't. But you just keep on doing your best and trusting that the way will show itself. You know, keeping true. Putting our understanding into practice. As I said, she had deep experience. And she would say many, many times, a kensho and 50 cents will buy you a cup of coffee. Meaning, it's no use if you don't put it into practice. You've got to put it into practice. You've got to keep to the precepts, do your meditation every day, like anybody. You don't just say, well, I've arrived here, now I'm on my little lotus throne, I'm happy. It's you've got to keep on going, you'll get kicked off your lotus throne pretty darn fast. Keeping up our meditation, keeping to the precepts, very simple practice. We never go beyond the law of karma. We can always make mistakes. We're always responsible for what we do. And this is the whole humility. We're always learning on, going on. We're always learning something. There's always more to do. River Master's faith enabled her to come to the West with no real plan. She came to do a lecture tour, started a little meditation group down in the Bay Area, finally realized that wasn't going to work, wasn't enough space for people, go up into the mountains like, as Dogen recommended, go up into the mountains. So she comes to Mount Shasta, you know, buying this property with no money of her own because she knew it was right. She was never rash, but suddenly she would just know, this is it. This is the place. We're going to do it. We're going to find the money. She's like, I heard the story. It was, you know, oh yes, we'll take it. And then turning to one of her disciples, where are we going to find $60,000, you know? But she was able to bring it together. Somebody lent her the money to put down money for the mortgage and all that, and all, it worked out. Here we are, you know? It's just an incredible example of faith, just to step out into the dark like that, stepping off into the unknown with no solid thing under your foot because you know that's the right thing to do. But it's not a rash thing. It's something that, you know, to consult, to sit still, what's good to do here. Well, Shasta Abbey is here and she made it big. Big ceremony hall, big altar, big Buddha, big, big. She had a wide and far-ranging view. She was a big person physically and in many other ways. She had a big heart, very, very kind, embracing everything and everybody. This long view and the wide view, deep, great wisdom and compassion. And especially the big teaching she gave us not this little small thing that made us comfortable, just made us feel a little better. She gave us the big thing, you know, deep and true. And you always had the feeling that there was a whole lot more that we didn't understand. Like you had to reach up and try and get to, but there's always more that you didn't quite get. There's always further to go. You never felt with her, oh yes, I really get it now. I know what, you know. It was never like that with Rav Master. We had the feeling there was a whole lot more that she couldn't quite express or didn't quite express to us. Just there's always further to go, always more to see, always the deeper thing, the wider view, the bigger picture. Buddhism with a big B, that's what she gave us. Well, now in the West, as I've mentioned before, there is a lot of what they call secular Buddhism. I think it's a bit of a, is it oxymoron when you've got two conflicting things? Mindfulness practice, which is great, I'm all for it, we do it. Actually, we do practice mindfulness. Meditation apps that you can practice at home and, you know, in the comfort of your own home. Maybe they're great, but they're not the big picture. It's not Buddhism with a big B. Buddhism is not secular, it's a religion. Somebody asked me recently, what's religion? Well, my answer was, for me, it's knowing that there is something a lot bigger than me, than us, that embraces everything that we're all part of, that we try to realize for ourselves and keep true to, live in harmony with, something beyond the mundane world, but not separate from that world, but something bigger than us. Buddhism with a big B, you know. We need to leave room for that, not just have this little small thing. The Buddha himself, as we know, as Rav Master would over and over say, he said, O monks, there is a not born, a not become, a not made, a not compounded. Monks, if that unborn, not become, not made, not compounded were not, if it didn't exist, there would be apparent no escape from this here that is born, become, made, compounded. But thinks, monks, there is an unborn, not become, not made, not compounded. Therefore, the escape from this here that is born, become, made, and compounded is apparent. Now, this is not just getting away from the world. It's actually seeing beyond the world. It's not like escaping from our little mundane world in the way we might think. It's seeing beyond that, seeing through that, looking beyond that, seeing the bigger thing. It's all embraced within that not born, not become, not made, not compounded. The Buddha himself said this, you know, keeping true to the source. That is the source, and not born, not become, and so on. That is what we're trying to harmonize with, find for ourselves, live in harmony with. Vast and profound, beyond anything we can imagine, beyond anything I can imagine. To know is bigger than we can fathom. It's big. And to try to keep true to this as best we can is the work of a lifetime. And this is what Reverend Master handed down to us, Buddhism with a big B, the bigger thing. That's what she gave us. And this doesn't make us any better than anybody else. We can say, oh, well, I have Buddhism with a big B. You know, it's not like that. But when you get a big gift, you've got to use that big gift. You can't chop it into little bits and pretend it's a little gift. The gift that she gave us was really big. Well, Buddhist practice is not always comfortable, especially when it's big. Keeping to the precepts, often very inconvenient, you know. Keeping true to the source, it does go against the stream of the world. There's no two ways about it. Often it's against the mundane thing. You're compelled to do something or to not do something that most people wouldn't quite understand. When you first start training, we know this. You know, we just can't do the things we used to do. We can't think in the ways we used to think. Some of our friends we'll separate from because we're going in different directions. And that's okay. You know, it's worth it. It's worth the seeming inconvenience. But boy, is it better to keep to the precepts than to not and then suffer. We all know that. You know. But it's not something we can just keep in the closet and bring out when it's convenient. Buddhism with a little b. We give our whole life to it. Really, there's no two ways about it when you really look at it. So how do we do this? How do we keep true to the source? Well, doing our faithful practice, meditating every day, you know, not rocket science. Bringing ourselves back whenever we can remember, yes, practicing mindfulness, yes. Keeping the precepts, studying the Dharma. Listening to our own heart and trying to do what's best, what's really the best thing here. Knowing we can be wrong, taking refuge in the Sangha, taking advice, you know. And especially always knowing that there is that bigger thing, something much bigger than we are, the unborn, unmade, uncompounded. Knowing that we are actually not in charge. We have very little control over our life. That's fine. We just have to entrust ourselves to that great thing. Well, Rupa Mataji was always a human being, and she always said she wasn't a saint. She said, that's kind of a relief. She said, if I was a saint, you wouldn't be able to live with me. Saints are difficult to live with. I'm not a saint. I'm a human being. I make mistakes, you know. And as a human being, she had a big, warm heart of compassion that embraced everybody. Great kindness. And this is the thing that many people remember about her. We just maybe met her very briefly. That great kindness that they felt from her is a huge attribute of hers. She could be really tough and quite intimidating. Some of us are scared to death of her. But she was never deliberately unkind. When she was tough and when she was, you know, fierce, it was for a reason. She might get annoyed, but she wouldn't just, you know, vent on somebody or be unkind to them. She always tried to practice kindness in the true sense, sometimes giving somebody a thump when they needed it. But it wouldn't be a... There was no selfishness there. I was with her for many years, and I never saw her do something just from selfishness, from a selfish motive. And to say that about somebody, that's quite something, you know. Never saw her actually act from a selfish motive. She could be wrong. She made mistakes. But never out of selfishness, not that I ever saw. It was always... She was trying to help people over and over again, and she'd be willing to be tough or to be unpopular or to have people write things in the press about her that we wish they hadn't, because she was trying to help people. She was not willing to compromise. She was not willing to be untrue to the source. She was going to keep true to that no matter what. Very a wonderful example for us to remember. This kindness, this compassion that she showed and had. And this is for us one of the ways we too can keep true to the source, by practicing kindness and compassion, nourishing that heart that we all have of kindness and compassion. We may feel we're not very good at meditation. We may sometimes break the precepts. We may feel we have very little spiritual experience. But we can all practice kindness. We can keep coming back to practicing kindness, both to ourselves and to others. As they say, Buddhism is kindness. And we can do that. And that is a way of keeping true to the source. We don't have to judge ourselves and think, oh, I can't keep true, I'm terrible, you know, I keep breaking the precepts, I get distracted, I'm worldly and all this. We can practice kindness. And in fact, we're probably doing better than we think we are. The other day I heard about this thing called imposter syndrome. Never heard of this. Thinking that you feel like a cardboard pretend person, you know. If they really knew how awful I was, nobody would have anything to do with me. I feel like a cardboard cutout of a person, like a monk, you know. Cardboard pretend person. And I described this to a couple of people, and some of them looked blank, and one or two said, oh yeah, I know that. You know? The imposter syndrome. Well, we're not imposters. Actually, we're doing it. We're doing the practice, and we have to just trust that. Don't feel like a cardboard cutout person if you have that tendency. We just step into our flesh and blood humanity and walk the path together, keeping going, practicing kindness to ourselves and others, practicing faith, especially. We can all practice faith, keeping true to the source, knowing or trusting if we don't feel that we know, or there's something in us does know. There is the unborn, uncreated, undying, and we're all part of it. There's nothing we can do about it. And as we're part of it, so is everybody else. Everything, every thought we think, everything we do, everything that happens to us is all part of that, the great matter, the unborn, undying. Trusting in it whether we feel we know it or not. It's a lot bigger and a lot kinder than our little mind. And always going on, going on, going on, always becoming Buddha. And that's Reverend Master's teaching for us today. Thank you. Thank you for being here. It's really nice to celebrate her life.